you call the president an Indonesian Muslim turned welfare thug and a racist in chief. I mean, yeah. Is that the kind of...
That's the way he's behaving.
But in Obama's America, the white kids now get beat up with the black kids cheering, yay, right on, right on, right on, right on.
If you are a religious person, you don't want someone telling your child that it's okay to be gay. It's as simple right. as that.
I'm gay and I don't molest any children. What do you think?
Well, I say you're lying.
Do right. you pray that I'll you pray that I'll die tonight?
If you're homosexual, I hope you get brain cancer.
You know, it took me about a year to start hating the 9/11 victims' families. It took me about a year.
I like turtles.
Okay, and welcome back to the Live Amerinds podcast. This is actually episode 176, or will be when I record it, when I post the recording of it. But tonight, I would like to welcome to the chat, starting at the bottom of my list, because Archer always started at the top, is Larkin, the infamous podcast listener. Hello, Larkin.
Hello.
And Lurie Dean. Hello, Lurie Dean.
How y'all doing?
And also joining us is Stephen, who may have stepped away for a moment. I'm not sure.
But I'm back now.
Oh, he's back.
Hello. Good.
Well, hello, everyone. And hi. How are you all? I'm just adjusting my levels a little bit because I'm getting some feedback here.
I'm happy it's almost Friday.
Yeah, Friday's always a good thing. Well, the original idea for the topic for tonight about healthcare was, of course, Daniel Brewer's idea. And Daniel Brewer seems to be unavoidably detained, as they say. I have no idea what specifically it is that he wanted to talk about.
I thought it was healthcare was the general topic. But.
Yeah, and he had some specific things he wanted to say about it. I guess it's been building up for a while, but I don't know specifically what he wanted to say. So what I think I'll do is I'll just start with maybe just sort of a general question. Basically, like, where do you think the state of the healthcare debate is? Where is it headed? What, as you see it, what is likely to emerge once a bill is put on the president's desk? Let's start with Larkin.
I don't think it's going to change all that much. All the the big insurance companies have major money they can put towards advertising and buying Congress and all the other things. Because they're making a lot of money off of this. They don't want anything to change.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Anything, what we have right now doesn't work. I mean, what is there, 40 million people in the U.S. don't have health insurance of any kind?
Yeah.
And so, it's what, there's 300 million? So what is that, about 106 people?
Yeah, something like that. I'd have to do the arithmetic, which is not my strong suit.
And out of seven people don't have health insurance.
Yeah.
And a lot of people just simply can't afford it, period.
Yeah, and one of the things about all of that is that there are certainly large numbers of people with no health insurance, but not a lot is said about the people who have inadequate health insurance that has extremely high deductibles, for instance, or maybe that only covers certain, maybe a catastrophic thing and not ordinary health care. And then on top of all that, there are the people who think that they've got really good health care, but then who find out that because of rescission, they actually don't have any health care, or health insurance, I should say.
Or that there are caps in their health care that they never normally encounter
yes.
until they have something catastrophic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I posted on my blog, but there was a video that was done by the folks over at Funny or Die about preserving the profits of health insurance companies.
Yep.
It seems to me that what the Baucus plan is all about is just that, that it's really not about any healthcare reform, but just about preserving profits. Do any of you see that any differently than I do?
Nope.
Nope, not really, no. I mean,
the
sad part is there's most anybody who's an insurance or healthcare insider would say if we were looking for a huge bang for the buck, we would go after existing fraud in the healthcare system, unnecessary treatments. Because quite honestly, that's where the vast majority of our existing at least in the U.S., that's where the vast majority of the national healthcare budget or spend goes, or at least half of that is considered to be fraud or unnecessary expenditures. But
I mean, I think that's, they say a half is fraud.
Well, a combination of fraud and unnecessary procedures. So, for example, medical sharing of medical information and medical records, quite often people are tested repeatedly for the same thing.
Okay, that I can see. But because you get the other half, like I have a friend right now who they just finally diagnosed after 6 months that he's got cancer. He just this last week, they finally, and it took him 6 months because every single time they went to do a test, he had to get like four or five doctors had to come together and talk about it. And his doctor couldn't just say, we're going to do, I understand at the beginning when it's not very serious, but for him, it started getting more and more serious and he was running constant high temperatures, like 103, 104 range. And his doctor still could not push stuff through because they had to get all okayed. And that's part of what I think is wrong with the system, is the doctor cannot do what needs to be done for the patient because he has to go back to the health insurance company and say, can I do this?
Right. I was personally much more of a fan of the HMO model rather than the insurance model of healthcare, because I agree. The whole reason that you go to a doctor is to have the doctor be able to direct your health care. And the one thing that a lot of people didn't like about the HMO model is they felt like the doctor was being the gatekeeper and incented to try and prevent a patient from getting certain types of treatment. Now, that was true 20 years ago. I think nowadays, people would say, good Lord, give us back the HMO model. Because at least we could, you know, our primary physicians could actually order treatments and or tests, and they were done.
And didn't have to go through, you know,
everything didn't have to be pre-authorized and whatever.
No, but HMO started in my home state, Minnesota.
Did they?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
So
Minnesota's an incredibly progressive state in so many ways.
Yeah, we were talking on the Twitters about Al Franken yesterday, because there was a hearing before his committee about reauthorizing the Patriot Act, and he said that unlike most of his colleagues, he wasn't a lawyer, but his research had shown that most Americans weren't lawyers either. And then he proceeded to read the Fourth Amendment to the a lawyer from the Justice Department, basically to say, hey, hang on a minute, how is this Patriot Act constitutional? And I suspect that the lawyer wasn't too thrilled about that. Now, I am going to, if I can remember how to do this, attempt to add Daniel to the call.
Hello.
Let me tell you, this is a high-energy show.
It is.
Where have you been?
I've been listening. been trying to get my computer to boot. I've been listening, and let me tell you, energy. Tons and tons of energy.
Well, I will refresh your memory that this topic was your idea.
I heard you say that as I was trying to get the machine to boot. I went to Windows 7.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm sorry, this is an aside. I'm trampling over your healthcare debate just for a moment, just to talk about me. I went to Windows 7, but unlike most people, I'm really anal about my computer because it's like my entire life. So I went out and bought a new hard drive and installed Windows 7 fresh on a new hard drive. So I still have my old Windows Vista that I can boot into by swapping out hard drives. Well, anyway, something happened with one of my side projects, and I had to go back into Vista because that was where I had information saved. Mm-hmm. And so I did that, and then, of course, Vista hasn't been running for like 2 weeks, so everything wanted to run. So that's why I was late, because I was trying to shut down Vista. After I got what I wanted, I was just like, stop, I don't want you to scan, I don't want you to, like, I don't care, just stop so I can shut down and go back into 7, and so there you go.
So in other words, it was a very traumatic
It was. It was very, very traumatic. You're lucky I'm standing here.
That's your Get a Mac commercial for the day.
Oh, no, no, because, you know, the Mac hasn't gone to the Christmas leopard yet. I'm sure I will have just as many problems over there. So, yeah, I was just listening. I missed a piece because I was listening, obviously 7 seconds delayed when you were trying to call me. But I think all I really missed was, okay, I think I click on it and then I do add to conference. Wait, add.
Which, by the way, is how you do it.
Yeah.
That was probably the most interesting part so far, or the most lively part of the discussion.
That's what post-production is for.
Well, there you go. I will disagree with something that Lori said, which is people wanting to go back to managed care. I don't, or maybe it was you were saying,
That was me. I would say the managed care model was despised 20 years ago.
And, well, it wasn't. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, and just now that we've had 20 years of water under the bridge of having managed care a whole lot less accessible, people would look at it now and say, you know, criminally, that was a better model than what we've got now, which is everything has to be pre-authorized. And
but in managed care, it had to be pre-authorized as well. You had the problem with managed
the company too, but my experience with managed care was with Kaiser, by the way. So
right. Well, okay. Well, here's the thing, though, because I spent way too many years of my life writing medical billing software specifically for managed care, and it was one of those fucked up insurance company things.
Yeah.
It wasn't just so much that the gatekeeper thing on your primary care doc, that was really kind of inconsequential. It was a brilliant move by the insurance companies to push off all of the risk, to just immediately divorce themselves of the risk as soon as they cashed that check. And they did this by creating just 15 tiers of middle people between your insurance company and your doctor. So you would pay, you know, back 20 years ago, you would pay $300 a month in insurance premiums. Your doctor would get paid somewhere between $25 or $30 a month for you. So there was $270 of that $300 premium that went to middlemen and everyone taking their 10 to 15% off the top.
Everyone getting their slice.
Absolutely insane. And the thing about doctors that nobody ever likes to talk about is doctors are the worst business people ever in the history of the world.
That's not what they go to school for.
Exactly. I was just going to say, and I say that out of love, because my entire family are doctors. And they spend 12 years in school, and not a single one of those classes has anything to do with business. They all have to do with obviously medical and healthcare stuff. And they are just the worst business. The most successful doctors that I know financially are ones who were smart enough to hire somebody to manage all the financial parts of it. Because doctors are just horrible with money. They're just, you know, so they get offered this deal by an insurance company saying, hey, we're going to pay you $50,000 every month to accept risk for these people, which was the managed care model. Right. And they were like, cool, yeah, I'll take that $50,000 every month. Well, obviously, you know, there's a lot of stuff involved in that. You know, how sick are these people that you're taking? How much money? Because once you've taken that $50,000 a month, you're now responsible for those patients. That was the managed care. Right. Yeah. And that was, and the worst thing was, is that, I'm sorry, I'm all over the road, but so the worst thing about managed care was all these little middle companies that I talked about. They would basically accept 100% risk for a bigger piece of the money, and then overextend themselves, go bankrupt, and then turn around the next day and refile under a new company and go. And then all those people that they had filed bankruptcy on were just pretty much SOL. So
right,
it really was just a big care. I think, I'm just going to go back. Go back to your original question, Arthur, and I'll shut up.
I've forgotten what it was now.
When I brought this up last week, what I really wanted to get at is, you know, we talk about healthcare reform, and you know, we have endless debates about healthcare reform with our Republican friends and neighbors, and even our conservative Democrat friends and neighbors. And I don't really think we understand just from a big picture standpoint of how the health insurance industry works, I guess was my point.
Well, that's probably a fair assessment. I don't think most people do. Certainly if more people did understand how it works, for one thing, they wouldn't be arguing against the public option and at the same time saying, but hands off my Medicare.
The other thing that... Go ahead.
Oh, just I was going to say, that's one of the things that really gets me in the healthcare debate, because people like my own father, who falls under Veterans Administration for healthcare and is now old enough to get Medicare, is one of the first ones to say, you know, I don't want any government involvement in my healthcare. Like, that's where you get your healthcare.
It's all government involvement.
Yeah, exactly. And the sad 100%. Part is, the sad part is the crazy right-wing talk radio party has senior citizens talking that way when their care comes from the government, you know, and
Lurie,
is funded by the public.
Lurie, is your dad a Republican?
Yes, and it shames me to say that.
I come from a long line of Republicans.
See, I'm one of the few people I know who is gay who has parents that were Democrats. I was brought up a Democrat.
My parents are both Republicans, but they're very moderate Republicans. They are the old school Republican. They are not the conservative or the crazy right wing. They're just very moderate Republicans. And I have had arguments, not arguments, I've had discussions with them in the past. They voted for Obama this last election, but inevitably it always comes down to me telling them, then take back your damn party. Get these crazy people out of your damn party.
I remember when there was such a thing as liberal Republicans.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I believe Ronald Reagan was pretty much
time.
A liberal. Yeah, before he became president. Yeah.
Yeah, I can remember the divisions between the liberals and the people who now run the party. Even as recently as the 1980 elections, because George Bush I was considered part of the Eastern liberal Republican establishment. And it was a point that was continually played up by the people who were backing John Connolly or Ronald Reagan or Phil Crane or any of the other right wingers. Of course, that's sort of laughable now, but in those days, people could do that and get away with it.
You had George W. Bush, who was born in Kennebunkport, Maine, pretty much raised in East, and then later moved to Texas and somehow managed to bilk the entire company in the country into believing that he was a Texan. He's a good old Southern boy. He bought a ranch right before he ran for president and sold it immediately after he left.
Yeah.
So that's neither here nor there. But the healthcare thing, and the one thing I would like to say about healthcare is, as far as branding goes, we've completely lost this war yet again, because we are not talking about healthcare reform. And I don't believe any person of good conscience would not say that the United States healthcare system, as far as our healthcare providers go, we do have some of the best educated and some of the best medical things, doodads and inventions and whatever available here in the United States. It is the healthcare insurance reform is what we really are talking about.
Exactly. And some people actually have started to call it that as well.
Yeah, well, you have to, because this is how they take, what we say as a matter of shorthand. We say healthcare reform, and what we really mean is healthcare billing reform. But right. By saying healthcare reform, we now have given them an opening, all the crazy people who are against this, we give them an opening to come in and talk about death panels and how government is going to dictate what your doctor is going to do. And we're really not talking about reforming healthcare. We're not talking about changing how a doctor practices medicine. We're simply talking about changing how they get paid for it.
Yeah.
And I suspect if most people knew how little of your premium actually reaches your doctor because of the for-profit health insurance companies that are between you and your doctor, you would be amazed, I believe. And that's how you could have a program like Medicare that runs at a 3% overhead, because it is a not-for-profit. I mean, it is not in the business of making a profit.
Exactly.
At what point did healthcare become a profit-run industry? I mean, has it always been that way in the United States, or is that just something the last 30, 40 years?
30, 40 years. The original shields, Blue Shields, in most of the states, actually started off as nonprofit doctor collaborations. Yeah.
Yes, with Kaiser. Kaiser was the insurance portion or the administration of the claims. That was actually not for profit, and the doctors group was the only for-profit group. Yeah. So many of the original HMO model and even insurance model companies, you know, were not-for-profit.
Right.
And my personal opinion, if we were to have health insurance reform, you know, if I can just throw a wish out on the table, would be that we would do a not-for-profit administration of the monies for healthcare and the claims processing and all of the pre-authorization stuff, because that would sort of wipe out the, you know, the incentive for the death penalty talk and the ridiculousness.
We're the only country in the world, and the only industrialized country in the world that it is legal to make a profit off of basic health care for an insurance company. There are private insurance companies in Germany, they're in Sweden, and whatnot, but they are required by law to be nonprofit for basic health care. Now, there are for-profit insurance companies that deal with Cadillac care, you know, getting private rooms in hospitals or plastic surgery and things like that. But as far as basic health care goes, it is illegal in every other industrialized country in the world for you to make a profit off of basic health care insurance.
Well, part of that, though, is because every other developed country provides basic health care in one form or another to its citizens. In New Zealand, for instance, basic health care is provided as of a right to all citizens and permanent residents. But about a third, actually, of the population has private health insurance as well. I mean, I do. And the one I have is not for profit, but and it's by far the biggest. But there are several for-profit companies in New Zealand who sell insurance, but it's supplemental. It's in some cases, it's so that you can get basic things done faster, but in other cases, it's so that you can get things covered that may not necessarily be covered or covered well by the public system. But it's legal to make a profit on that if people want to. But the difference is that it's supplemental in the sense that you don't need it. And that's really what the point is, that basic health care is covered for all citizens and permanent residents. And so the profit is really, if an insurance company makes profit on the services they provide, is really kind of irrelevant because nobody needs insurance.
Well, but New Zealand has a single payer, basically.
Yes, yeah.
All right, but like you look at somebody like Germany who doesn't have a single payer. Multiple insurance companies provide that basic health care. They all compete with one another, but they're required by law to be nonprofit. So they cannot be a for-profit company if they're providing basic health care. So
that's just a fair model. Quite honestly, yeah. We should be profiting off of people surviving.
Yeah.
You know, Larkin asked the question of, you know, has it always been this way and when did it change? I don't know the exact point that it changed, and pardon me for a moment, I'm going to go off on a small tangent, but when you talk to my dad, who was a small town family doctor for, you know, quarter of a century, actually probably longer because he refused to retire, but he'll talk to you about things like in the old days, you know, it was a doctor would come into town. He would, you know, want to set up his business. And what would happen is one of the established doctors in that town would take him under his wing, kind of mentor him, bring him into his practice. And as that doctor retired, he would hand his patients off to the new doctor. Mm. And that was really how you kind of made your mark in that town, right? You know, I will go to Dr. Smith, and Dr. Smith has been my family physician forever. And, you know, he brings in Dr. Jones as he's ready to retire, and then he passes off his patients to Dr. Jones, right? Dr. Jones takes over the practice, and that, you know, Jones has been there, he's seen you, and it's kind of a continuation of care. But there was a point near Dad's retirement, actually probably before that, but somewhere in the 70s, 80s, where patients no longer belonged to the doctor. Patients belonged to an insurance company. And the insurance company made the decision on which doctors you could see. And so there was a definite paradigm shift. When that happened, I don't exactly know. But it was, you know, within the last 25, 30 years.
Your dad didn't mind getting paid in goats, but the insurance company does.
Exactly. And, you know, dad maintained, you know, because there was a really kind of a, it wasn't like an overnight thing, right? Nowadays, we can't imagine going in to see a doctor without insurance. However, even, you know, 15 years ago, that wasn't necessarily the case. You could go in and see a doctor and just pay a fee for service without having insurance. All became, you know, nowadays you just can't even contemplate, you know, why. You wouldn't even think that. Well, why would I go in and I don't have insurance, so I'd just go to the emergency room. You know, it's kind of one of those things that there was a definite paradigm shift. You know, dad was one of the few doctors that, you know, still made house calls all the way up until the time that he retired. And on top of that, you know, he didn't charge like a lot of his patients, a lot of his older patients that he had had forever that couldn't afford. You know, he would charge them what they could afford, or he just wouldn't charge them at all. So
were people healthier back then? Let's get rid of the high fructose corn syrup and all this other crap that's in all our food. But people healthier back then because they had access to a doctor.
I don't know. I really don't.
I would suspect they probably were, but we don't actually have any evidence.
I don't know.
You know, I just, because that's what goes through my mind then, is in the old system, people seem to have access to a doctor no matter what.
Yeah.
They didn't lose their house or, you know, I mean, they didn't have to declare bankruptcy because they had humongous doctor bills that they couldn't pay.
Yeah.
Or they had a heart attack or, you know, list here, catastrophic.
Yeah.
One of the problems with determining if people were healthier then as opposed to now is that we have better diagnostic techniques now than we had then, and better reporting as well of disease and things. So we have better information than we had back then. It's kind of hard to really compare the past with the present.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can take things like life expectancy and whatnot, and our life expectancy numbers have continually gone up. I don't know that they've gone up as fast as other countries, but we've not had a case where our life expectancy or, you know, median life expectancy has dropped. But, you know, we have now arrived at this point where it's a truly broken system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And no one seems to want to talk about how broken the system is.
How about if we got rid of the term insurance? Because it's not really insurance you're buying.
No, you're not.
You buy insurance for your car because if your car gets totaled, they replace your car, right?
Right.
It's not really insurance, so that's a misnomer in the first place.
No, car insurance works on a perverted level simply because there is a fixed cost, right? That would be the cost of replacing the car. Health insurance, on the other hand, doesn't really have a fixed cost, right? I mean, you could end up having cancer and other kind of complications that could cost millions of dollars.
But that's not health insurance. That's health care. You know, we like to throw that term insurance in there, but to me it's...
The word coverage is actually even a better word.
Yeah, I hate that term insurance because insurance you ride the bet. You buy life insurance and you pay X amount for it because you think you're going to outlive...
Right.
So that, you know what I mean? That's not, health insurance is not that same thing.
But it's supposed to be. That was the original, the original thing was, hey, let's put together a bunch of people because the bigger the risk pool is, the less it will cost everyone. So that by having the largest possible risk pool that you can, then when you have the million, $2 million treatments that have to be done for these few people, that money is, you know, that burden of paying for that is spread out amongst, you know, a very large risk pool. What has happened over the years is that insurance companies have become very good at, you know, denying people, so they cherry pick who they want in their risk pool.
Section suits.
Well, you know, unfortunately, it's not very regulated. I mean, that really just some of the most basic regulations don't exist in the health insurance industry.
Because I get tired of pre-existing conditions. I mean,
I think even Republicans, no matter what comes out of Washington this time, pre-existing conditions is gone. I don't see any possible way that that will not make it. You know, pre-existing
a ban on not insuring based on pre-existing conditions. Is that what you mean?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. I think the era of pre-existing, even the insurance companies themselves, back in the Clinton era, were willing to give up pre-existing conditions.
That's ludicrous. How many people go someplace and you can't get insurance because
right.
you had something before? I mean,
but
it's called life.
But,
life happens.
But does creating a ban on not insuring because of pre-existing conditions, man, it's hard to phrase that.
I know.
Does that really mean anything unless there is some sort of regulation or ban that goes with that on the practice of rescission? Because otherwise, all the insurance companies are going to do is look for an excuse for canceling insurance for somebody who they knew had a pre-existing condition. So, oh, you forgot to cross that T. Sorry, you're canceled.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, those were the first two things Obama said in his speech to the joint session of Congress, which was, you know, pre-existing conditions are gone and you cannot drop someone's coverage because they got sick.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, what is left up in the air, however, full disclosure, my husband works for an insurance company and they've been arguing this back and forth to try to figure out what's going to happen. But you know, what's left up in the air is whether they're going to be allowed to rate that up or whether they're going to have to cover people anyway. You know, obviously what the insurance companies would like is, okay, well, we'll no longer, you know, deny you coverage for pre-existing condition. We're just going to come up with we're going to rate you up. So if you have a history of heart disease in your family, whatever, you're going to have to pay twice as much in premiums as these other people.
Yeah.
Whether we're going to have and that's where the public option comes in, right? Because the public option provides competition. And so if you don't have that public option, if you just leave it to the insurance company's own devices, they still have fleets of underwriters sitting out there that go through these things with a fine tooth comb, right? They're just going to keep jacking up the premiums. And then on top of that, you know, we're talking about requiring everyone to have insurance.
Right, which, again, full disclosure, work for an insurance company, but I think the insurance companies would love to see forced mandatory insurance coverage because.
But how? Hell yeah!
But how do you force it if people don't have the money to make the premiums?
Well,
I think they're after it the same way that they've done auto insurance.
They
which
will.
Is,
the Baucus plan. The Baucus plan will tax. Will fine anyone who doesn't have health insurance. And I've seen some estimates that a typical family of four making as little as $66,000 a year would be better off not having health insurance and paying the fine than to pay the health insurance. Because the fine, was it $2,300 or something like that a year?
Yeah.
And
the health insurance, the coverage would be $2,300 a year?
It would be more than that. It would be at least $5,000 for a family that size.
But the fine would be $2,300.
Yeah, the fine would be $2,300. So it would be cheaper for them to pay the fine and go to the emergency room for their health care. And the other thing that bothers me about this is that the Baucus has apparently bought into the Republican ploy to say, well, we'll give people tax credits to pay for their health insurance,
right.
Which does absolutely no good whatsoever for anyone who is middle class, let alone working class or even poorer.
Yeah, or poverty.
Exactly.
Even.
Yeah. Well, and in these same people that want, you know, the Republicans that are championing this tax, I'm sorry, this is an aside, but, you know, they're worried about the illegal immigrants getting coverage. Well, it's like most illegal immigrants don't get tax credits. It doesn't really help them.
Yeah. And the thing, there's actually, I don't want to get off on the tangent about talking about illegal immigrants, but I'm especially disturbed by that whole discussion because, first of all, illegal immigrants are human beings too, and we seem to be saying that they are subhuman because they're illegal immigrants. Well, I don't see it that way. But the thing that bothers me more about that is that what good does it do society to have a whole bunch of illegal immigrants who get no health care and are going around with diseases that the taxpayers are going to pick up?
Right.
Like swine flu or tuberculosis.
Which we're going to pay for their health care anyway. Because
exactly.
It, goes right back to the emergency room healthcare model.
Yeah, but it's that.
You don't understand. Again, it's black and white, don't you?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, well, Republicans think in black and white.
Literally.
It says
exactly.
Brown.
I was going to say. Yeah. Black, brown, yellow, and white.
Apparently, they're not precious in his sight.
Yeah.
You know, okay. I cannot believe that most members of Congress haven't had people discuss with them everything we've just talked about.
Well, I'm sure they have.
They have, but we are not giving them millions of dollars.
Yes.
Well, and that's what let's... Again, it always comes back to the insurance companies have billions. How many billion did the health insurance companies spend last year electing politicians and on lobbyists? And I bet it's in the billions.
In this year alone, since the healthcare debate started, the insurance companies are spending $1.4 million a day in lobbyists.
Hmm. Yeah, and I know
that. But just this as a point of reference, the CEO of Cigna, I want to say, can't remember his name. Anyway, he has been paid $750 million over the past 5 years in salary and in perks. That's how much money these people have to throw around.
Yeah. And it gives them a strong incentive to not pay out benefits because they've got these lavish lifestyles they need to continue. And in the corporate business paradigm of greed being the first, second, and third most important things a business does, they have to make sure that they don't pay out any more than they absolutely have to. And that's why they're so keen on blocking pre-existing conditions, why they're so keen on rescission. It gives them a way of collecting all this money in premiums and then refusing to pay out.
It's not only that. I wish Michael Moore's film, Sicko, would have gone more in depth as to what happens at the insurance companies. Because, I spent too many years of my life writing software for managed care. So I've worked with a lot of different insurance companies, both small and big. And regardless of the size of the insurance company, I guarantee you, that there is someone on staff, usually multiple people on staff, whose entire job is to start investigating people as soon as they have to pay out. And that is their job. They get bonuses per year based on how many people they can get rescinded after they've started paying for care. They will find anything. When you hear these anecdotal things about, well, they shut down his health insurance because he didn't report acne. That is what these teams of people do. And they are well aware of the intricacies of the litigation system in this country where you can just drag things out in court to the point that it is no longer even a big deal. Because if you can drag it out, if you can drag a patient with cancer out long enough, he's going to die.
Yeah.
And then the settlement that you may eventually have to pay will be 50% cheaper than had you paid for his health care. And that's the kind of numbers that these companies deal with every single day. There are people that are employed to do this, to break people down to numbers and diseases down to numbers and basically kill people in order to make money.
Right. Absolutely.
It's on bite. How do you get that on the nightly news?
How much money does the insurance industry spend in advertising on, the five media companies that provide news in this country?
Totally. No. I mean,
think about it this way, right?
The answers are out there. The problem is that the system is so broke. And it's not just broke with this. It's broke all the way around because politicians can be bought.
Well, not only politicians. It would be one thing if politicians could be bought because we've had that happen before in this country. What they have outflanked us on is the ownership of the media, so that now we have a case where, not only can the politicians be bought, but our news sources can be bought.
Oh.
And, by having our news sources bought, nobody is even the wiser of what's happening.
Well,
I won't say nobody, but I mean, it's just very difficult.
Protection of the profit model. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely.
That's what frightens me about what's happened, I guess. I mean, pretty soon there won't even be a paper left in the nation that still publishes with an independent voice because they're going out of business too. So the only media that will be left are the ownership of, you know, five large media corporations that spoon-feed us what we're allowed to know.
I mean, you do have some notable standouts, right? I mean, you have the St. Petersburg Times, which is owned by the nonprofit Poynter Institute from my hometown, yay, who does a very admirable job of independent reporting. You know, but they are one small newspaper in, you know, granted a large metropolitan area, but there's just so many. I mean, we could not encompass it all in an hour because it's beating that same drum, right? Corporate personhood, money is free speech, deregulation of media ownership. There you go. Those are the problems. Okay, just fix those.
Ronald, thank you, Ronald Reagan.
Well, you know, and it's not just Ronald Reagan. You know, I mean, Ronald Reagan, yeah, he did a lion's share of it, but it's, you know.
Well, he's had help along the way, and some of those helpers have been Democrats.
I was going to say, you know, Clinton was right in there.
Yeah. Clinton was the only one in the middle of all of that. So,
and he was definitely right in there.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, that's that new, DLC.
So when is this media that we're doing right now going to start taking over? And because the internet should be the new democratization. Is that I can't say the word democratize. You know what I'm
democratization
saying.
of the media. The problem with it is it's very expensive to do news.
Yeah.
And so if we're not just going to become an echo chamber, right? I mean, we all watch Rachel Maddow. We all watch different news programs, and we can all sit around. Yeah, we can all sit around and we can, repeat back what they say and whatnot. But very few of us have the time or the resources to go out and independently investigate things. And that is what the newspapers have always provided. You know, that is what news organizations have always provided, was that kind of investigative journalism. You know, you look to the UK, where they have the BBC, which is publicly funded,
Yeah.
I don't know. We don't have that here. You know, we have PBS, but
they don't really do news. Not really.
Well, and when they did do news in a remarkably wonderful way, you know, Bill Moyers, and whatnot. You know, he quit because no one was ever paying attention.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and most of the new media things that are done generally have a how do I want to put this gently, political bias, and they don't have anywhere near the resources of the main media organizations, the networks, the print publishers, what have you. So, yeah. I mean, even if they wanted to, they couldn't begin to, have the same impact, I guess, as, say, phone news.
Yep.
So it comes back to people have to care about, people have to stop watching their pop culture. Sorry, Big Fatty. No. And get involved. I mean, and again, everybody who's listened to this probably, we're all part of the choir, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, sometimes that's how it starts.
Like,
I mean,
my next door neighbors, you know? Or,
yeah.
I don't know. Because you're not supposed to talk about politics or religion at work, right?
Isn't that genius? Those to me, psychologically, those are the two most genius bullshit things that have been pushed over on us in our world. It's impolite to talk about politics, and you should never talk about salaries. Now, let's see. Here I am out to dinner with my coworkers and whatnot, and we've now accepted as part of, you know, common like courtesy or whatever, that it's impolite to talk about salaries. Well, who does that benefit? It only benefits the company. It doesn't benefit any of the workers, right? To find out that somebody is making more money than you, or that you're making way more than other people, that seems to be of benefit to know those kind of things, except to the company, if you're trying to keep people working for as little money as you possibly can.
And if you look at most employer handbooks, it is against company policy to discuss your wages.
Yep. And we've now made it into, you know, it's impolite to talk about politics. And, you know, I know I've said this 10,000 times, so forgive me. But, you know, we've turned political discourse into screaming. That's what people think of when they hear political discourse. And that is, you know, that is thanks to our media, thanks to our news media. That is the accepted method of political discourse. Let's take somebody from the far right, put them up against somebody from the far left, and just have them shout at each other.
Yeah.
And there you go. There's your political discussion in 2 minutes. Now let's go to commercial.
Extreme wackos from both ends.
Right.
Yeah, because it gets ratings.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And aside from that, it keeps people from actually paying attention. Because who the hell wants to watch that? It's just two people screaming at each other.
Yeah, people will tune it out because it's uncomfortable.
Or, and do you blame them?
Because, no.
Well,
that's why I don't watch a lot of
news. But to me, they don't really talk about real issues anyways, because no matter what you do, you always have to get to the root, what the cause or what's causing the problem. And we all have our biases for what causes the problems.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's the same as religion. You know, you're indoctrinated from being a little kid on how you view the world and how things work. And so, you know, you get all the, you know, the right wings think it's all the welfare people who are causing all the problems. You know, being on welfare is such an awesome thing. So much money on welfare. You'd never exactly. want to do anything else in your life.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's because you have Reagan's mythical welfare queen that drives around in a Cadillac, you know, living high off of the dole. You know, that person doesn't exist. They've never existed. That was a pipe dream. That was, you know, a media construct by the PR team for Reagan.
Joe the plumber.
Exactly. I mean, how are we losing this debate, you know, these things to a party that, complains about czars at a conference where Bill Bennett is in attendance, where they talk about how evil
exactly.
czars are, where the former economic czar is a keynote speaker. That's what I mean, drug czar. It's like, and nobody, finds this to be, out of place. Here are the people that argue against government insurance while talking about how they love Medicare, and nobody finds a problem with that. Here are these people that, on Tuesday will say that they're against this option because the president is for it, but then when the president changes his mind, now they're for it because he's against it. It's these people are just... And we're losing to them.
Yeah. Well, I work with this dingbat who I've mentioned her before, and she was bitching about someone in her family not having coverage or coverage costing a lot of money. And then I started, and then I brought up, and then we got to profit. She goes, "No, profits are a good thing." It's like she's right. not able to see that insurance
extra.
Company profits. Gouging, basically. It's not even profits. Let's call it gouging. The whole
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing that pisses me off.
It's causing a problem. And she's unable to see that. And,
I think that that's because people think there would be no jobs if the insurance industry wasn't for profit. And quite honestly, there were plenty of jobs in the not-for-profit coverage world.
What we've created are these paper pushing jobs where these people never lift a finger to help your health condition. They don't give you pills. They don't examine you. They don't do any. They just sit there and push paper around and take 30% to 40% off the top of your premiums.
Right.
And these same people took all the jobs where people actually did something and made a living, manufacturing, and sent all those jobs overseas.
That is and that's the bigger picture is, if we were to go to a single-payer healthcare plan, we would probably lose a lot of people, lose a lot of jobs in the insurance industry. If we all just went Medicare for all, we would probably lose a lot of jobs in the insurance industry. However, we now have a country back where it is economically feasible for us to have manufacturing plants here, for us to have other companies based here, because they no longer have to pay our healthcare premiums to employ people.
Right.
We become much more competitive from a manufacturing standpoint, and we don't make anything here anymore.
Yeah, and one of the problems with this whole debate is that the perspectives are all skewed. They talk about how much that the Obama plan is going to cost. Some said $1 trillion, then it was $2 trillion. Now they're saying $3 trillion. But we know for sure that doing nothing will cost at least twice that, probably more,
right?
Because the cost of healthcare is growing faster than GDP. As it stands right now, for every $150 of added wealth that the economy generates, the healthcare industry is eating up $150. And that's not sustainable. Sooner or later, if we don't do anything, sooner or later, the economy will collapse under the weight. It cannot continue.
No argument.
We deal when everything collapses. Everybody needs to become Mormon for a while and have 6 months' worth of groceries and stuff in their home. So when the economy does collapse, you're around
the bomb shelter.
Well, the thing is that if this isn't tended to now, it's still going to have to be tended to. It's just that we have the luxury, you could say, of dealing with this in a calm, rational way if it weren't for the Republicans. And if we miss this opportunity, the next time it'll be addressed, it will be done in the midst of a major crisis that will make probably the last bailouts and the Great Depression look like a kindergarten tea party. It will be a major crisis because the economy will be on the verge of collapse and the government will have to say, oh my God, let's throw all the insurance companies out and go to single-payer universal health care. And if the Republicans really don't want that, then they should work with Democrats to get something that can that they can live with.
But they're not going to.
No, of course not. And Daniel, to touch on something you were saying earlier, you were talking about basically how did we get into the situation where we're losing a battle that we should be winning. Because the people, the American people, are behind us on this. And I think what it all boils down to is that starting with the Reagan Revolution, the language of political discourse shifted all of a sudden. And Democrats were left floundering with Me Too-ism, by and large. The Republicans always talk about freedom and choice. But for them, freedom and choice always is in corporate interests. It's not in the interests of the ordinary people, ever.
Right.
And Democrats are left never saying what they're for anymore. You know, what are Democrats for? You say, well, we're against insurance companies ripping off the healthcare worker. Well, no, that's not what we're for. We are for healthcare as a right for all people.
Healthcare for all.
Yes, exactly. And the thing of it is, the Republicans' mantra these days, and we've seen it in the Tea Parties, we've seen it in the town hall fiascos, their mantra is that government does nothing well. That big government is always evil and then should always be opposed. Well, that's obviously nonsense because you could see even Republicans don't want to get rid of the VA or Medicare or national defense or the interstate highway system or food safety or product safety or any of the other things that the government does.
Well, actually, they do want to get rid of food safety, but that's only because the corporations want them to get rid of it.
Well, some of them do, but they they always turn to the federal government every time there's another tainted food scandal.
Right.
I guess what I'm getting at basically is that I think that part of the problem is that Democrats aren't forceful enough in saying what it is they're for. And I think that what we ought to be going about is saying we want government that works on behalf of the people, that's the honest broker between the two extremes of the corporate elites on the one hand and the ordinary people on the other. Somebody to stand in the middle as a referee and saying, hang on a minute, corporations, you're getting too carried away. And on the other hand, people, you're demanding too much. And we don't have that at the minute. What's missing is that government has been on the side of business for at least 25 years, probably 30 years. And Democrats, I think, need to start saying, hang on a minute, we need government to play its part in this. The people want government to play its part. We just need to phrase it better.
I think honestly, the government should just do what Microsoft is doing.
What, put out buggy software?
Well, actually, you know what? For years, Microsoft's buggy OSs have, you know, spawned an entire industry, the antivirus industry, which has, trust me, I'm going somewhere with this. This antivirus industry that spends their time making everybody frightened to death of, you know, email and third-party cookies and, you know, these are just evil, weird things that we, you know, most people don't even know what they do, but they're scared of. And the now Microsoft has announced kind of quietly, not that quietly, but quietly, I guess, for the general public, that they will be basically including as part of Windows, an antivirus system that will, you know, you no longer need to have a third-party antivirus system. They're going to take care of it. And the private, for-profit antivirus bloatware industry is just screaming bloody murder, right? You, I mean, they're taking them to court. You're taking away our business model. Here's a bunch of parasites that have grown, you know, this incredibly intrusive software, never mind. The point is, Microsoft said, fuck you, we're fixing it, and we're going forward. And if you go out of business, that's your tough shit. That's what the government should do. Single-payer healthcare, fuck you. If you go out of business, fuck you.
Yeah, if you want to play, if you want to administer, that's fine. But, you know, too bad if you don't want to play in the new world.
Well, and that's the thing about business. Is like, you know what? Business is, when did we shift in our heads in this country to the point that if I have a business making, I make widgets and technology progresses to the point that widgets are obsolete, why am I okay to sit around and complain about the fact that nobody buys my widgets anymore, right? I mean, business always has to evolve with things.
Yeah.
That is the free market that they love so much. So, you know, in this case, why do we care? Business will adapt.
Yes, and that's right. One of the things that annoys me the most about the Republican arguments. What they're essentially saying is that the insurance industry is so awful, so despicable, so unable to innovate and to compete that, of course, all Americans would just rush to this public option and that would be the end of the private insurance industry. Well, that would never happen that way. The insurance industry would adapt, just as every other company does when it's faced with new market conditions.
Yep.
Well, does that mean the Republicans aren't really for free enterprise?
Of course they're not. They never have been.
But that's what they push, because that's the American way, you know? You get to start your own company and grow, and
the free enterprise applies only to the existing corporations. They laud the case of the entrepreneur and all that, but they don't do anything to support entrepreneurs. It's one of the big haves.
Or
small businesses. That's one of the big haves of the whole political debate. If the Republicans were serious about helping small businesses, they would be for, among other things, health insurance reform, because then small businesses would be able to compete more evenly on the world stage, but even just on the national stage. They're not serious about free enterprise, and they never have been.
No, look at the copyright.
Yeah.
The only enterprise that they're for is whoever is the current top dog.
Yeah,
right. You look at copyright. Look at copyright. Lawrence Lessig made the famous argument that it's the Mickey Mouse Law. You know, every time Mickey Mouse comes up for copyright expiration, you know, Congress miraculously extends the life of copyrights for everyone, to the point now that we're at what, 65 or 75 years.
75.
After the death of the creator, and it's ironic that it's Disney, because basically Disney made his fortune by taking things that were in the public domain, things that had come out of copyright, and reinventing them. Mm. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, these fairy tales that had gone out of copyright. He was able, because they were in the public domain, he was able to take them and create something new out of them. And they've basically been spending the last 50 years of that corporation's existence in fighting everyone from ever doing that.
Yeah.
You know, let's prevent anyone from making money the exact same way they made money.
Yes.
You know, I think you need to make a magnetic ribbon that we can put on the back of our vehicles.
I think so. I think it should be mauve. Is that being used?
Well, Lord Byron says in the chat room that it's time to play a copyrighted Disney song. And fortunately for everyone, I don't have any. So.
When you wish.
No. Although, I actually come to think of it, some song from High School Musical 3 was the free song of the week on iTunes about a year or two ago. I don't think I have that.
That does not mean you can broadcast it.
No, and I don't have it anyway, so.
But when you.
No, I only broadcast PodSafe music, including my own theme song, which I played myself from a public domain tune.
Oh, God, not this story again.
Oh. I still love the I like turtles the best.
Yeah, the voices are in the fair use category. But I think we're going to wrap it up for today.
And yeah, we solved a lot, didn't we?
Yeah, well, one can't solve these sorts of things, but
this is a conversation that went everywhere and solved nothing.
Well, but that's kind of, I think we should, everybody should send a copy of this to their congressperson.
Oh, God, they would.
Well, maybe
shut them down.
Maybe they go to sleep like Senator What's-His-Name in the committee the other day. That could be useful.
I think it's easy to have. I used to work someplace where I was able to have these kind of conversations with Republicans, and we'd agree at the end.
Hmm.
And I always said, well, this needs to happen on a larger scale between people.
Well, I mean, Larkin, I know both you and I listened to the same technical show, This Week in Tech. Mm-hmm. And John C. Dvorak, who is an old school technology writer that's been around since before God, is, you know, fairly conservative, a fairly conservative pro-business Republican. And when asked point blank on the show the other day about healthcare, he was like, no, I think we should have a single-payer system. I mean, honestly, I don't think this is a, you know, left-wing, right-wing thing. No. This is a corporate individual thing.
Yes.
The corporations want it to be the same way that it is. People who actually have to pay for this shit want this to be like every other industrialized country in the world.
It's time to take our country back.
It is. And you know what? I know this is stupid. I know this is trite or whatever. But for God's sakes, it literally will take 5 minutes, if even that long, of your day. Call your Congress critters. Just call them and say, I want public, you know, I want the public option.
Would a postcard be better?
Not since 9/11. Not since they've – with. It's like I thought postcards eliminated the screening process. No. Postcards also take 2 or 3 weeks to get to your congressperson.
But
because of all
fax
the screen-
machines? How about a fax machine?
Yeah. Fax, email, or call. But a phone call means more than than an email. A fax means more than a phone call, I think. Especially a handwritten fax.
Yeah, if it looks like it's mass-produced, they're less likely to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. And I've heard that they take very little notice of emails nowadays.
Emails are because they can just be, it's like spam, right? I can write a program today that would send out 10,000 emails to my congressman with a bunch of different names. I can even download the database of registered voters and just have everyone's name attached to it at random.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, email is just completely anonymous, even when it's not.
Yeah. Even when it's not. Mm-hmm. And on that note.
That's why, I'm sorry, one more thing. That's why I hate these online petitions. They don't mean shit.
I never sign online petitions.
Do not waste your time on online petitions because there's no possible way for them to verify anything. I mean, nobody pays attention to them because I could make it up. It's just names. I can make it up.
It's just a way to harvest email addresses, if you ask me.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, don't waste your time. If you want to make a difference, call. That's the easiest thing to do. And then aside from that, email. Fax. Yeah. That's what I meant.
You could also add Facebook groups don't make any difference either.
Yeah. Handwritten fax, by the way. If you type out a form letter, it's meaningless.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, by the way, one of the things I always do is when I get one of those emails saying, add your name and then send it to 10 people, I'm the one who always deletes it.
Yeah.
I break the chain.
It's you broke the chain. No one loves you anymore.
I know. Clearly.
Bad things will happen to you if you don't follow. Take, for example, Arthur in New Zealand, who had 14 kiwi birds crapping on his lawn. He broke the chain.
And they weren't just canoodling.
Not like the other birds who have not been outside my window today, by the way.
Thank that's because you called them out.
I did. Uh-oh, busted.
Shut it down.
Well, joining us today were, let's just do it this way. Larkin, what would you like to plug tonight?
I'll plug Big Fatty. I don't know if I could plug that. I think I would be afraid of the explosion if we actually plugged them.
You know that that's going to be the intro to like one of next week's shows.
Yay.
He's watching Survivor.
Oh, I'm glad everyone is excited about it.
And next, Larry Dean, what would you like to plug tonight?
Well, I think tonight I'm plugging liveitupthepodcast.com.
Oh, that's nice. He just has a new show out. That's Wes Stone, who has a new show out. And Steven, we forgot to address you specifically.
Yeah, it happens.
But we love you anyway.
I know. I'll plug the Metacast. The Meta Show, whatever it is. Yeah. I hear it's going to be great.
Have there been any episodes posted ever?
Not posted yet.
No.
But there's episodes, they exist.
How many times have you redone them?
Just once.
So, Daniel, do you have anything to plug?
The spreading taint. Just the largest gay and lesbian guild in World of Warcraft. Find them on Google, spreading taint.
So are you going to actually eventually release this meta show?
Oh, I'm sorry, my phone's ringing. I got to answer that.
Well, okay.
Yes, it's going to be released.
What about Dubious Intent? What's happening with that?
Dubious Intent has transitioned from a group show into a solo show. That is, it's not going anywhere. It will still be found at the same place it's always been found, dubiousintent.com.
But it will be recorded, is that correct?
Well, they're all recorded.
No, I meant as opposed to a live show.
Yeah, no, yes, it will be more pre-recorded. It would not be live streamed.
Okay. It'll be highly, highly edited.
Highly polished and edited. Just it'll be a wonder to behold.
I'm sure it will. Well, I still don't have any nice saying to end the show with, although I missed it last week. Tara in Michigan apparently suggested that I say goodbye from the future, except that I'm always joined by people in the past. So that's not going to work. So I still don't have...
coming back to haunt you.
People should email you clever suggestions.
They should do, because I need one. So
the way that you arrive at consensus is not always a straight line.
Yeah, well, Larry Dean suggested I could say I still got nothing, but I can't say that.
That's already been taken.
Yeah, it's already been taken. It's copyrighted, I think. Well, thank you.
I don't think so, Sonny Jim.
How about dear Gussie?
Oh, dear Gussie.
Dear Gussie.
I'm working on it. But thanks all of you for joining me, and I will be back with a regular Amaranth podcast next week and another live show, possibly another live show a week from today. Our little nieces are going to be in town, and I may be babysitting next week, in which case I won't be having a live show, but watch the Twitter and the podcast site, amaranthpodcast.com, for information about that. But stay tuned. But again, thanks for joining me, and bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amaranth Podcast at amaranthpodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amaranthpodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.